This is the Podium Finish Live from Austin, Texas, and various points across the country. Here's your host, Rob Tiansen.
And a good day to everyone out there listening to us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify or whatever podcast platform you listen to. I'm your host, Rob Tiansen, and I'm joined alongside, as always, Nathan Solomon. And we are so happy and glad that you could join us for the fastest hour of racing talk. And it's going to be a great one today because Nathan has just come back from Dover Motor Speedway. And if you didn't know, he also called his ESPN Plus game for the St. Bonaventure Bonnies against our rival school in the Buffalo area. So super cool that we have a play-by-play guy on our show, and I'm just a journalist doing the show. But hey, it's so cool that the Bonnie connection is paying off as always. And we've got a lot to get to for this edition of TPF Live. And the reason why I'm saying it's such a big show, besides the fact that Nathan is back from not only calling a game on ESPN Plus, but he also had an action-packed Dover Motor Speedway race weekend. If he thought that he had a lot to get to at Richmond, boy, did he figure out how much the Monster Mile would be jam-packed and a lot of great content that he got from the racetrack. Unfortunately, Mother Nature kind of ruined his full race weekend plans, but that's okay because he's got so many interviews that he got from the racetrack. So the first date, I would say, made sure that the podium finish was on top of the podium. Yes, I am referring to you, Casey Campbell. I'm putting you on blast right now on the college and podcast side of the show, but whatever, it's all good and fun and games. But we'll get to that here in a moment. But my gosh, recapping Dover, looking back at what happened, Mother Nature being a nuisance yet again, tire issues abound, tire compounds being good for Dover racing. And oh, by the way, the most popular driver winning his first cup race this year, but his first oval race win in 546 days. I've been 2 years older than that time period, of course. So I went from my early 30s to my 20s. But anyways, why don't we introduce Nathan right now? I know he's getting ready to talk. He's telling me to get that hammer ready. So Nathan, welcome to the show again, as always. I know you've had a really busy Tuesday as we're recording this, but how have you been doing, man?
Well, I was doing great this weekend up until about 3:45 on Sunday afternoon when the skies opened up at Dover Motor Speedway. And unfortunately, I couldn't stick around till Monday for the race. So I had to drive back Sunday night, which kind of sucked. And I was just in my car for a very long time, race traffic and Philly traffic and driving back, so that was really not fun, but got a ton of content, of course, so always glad to be at the track, though. Saw a good Xfinity race, saw a good start to the cup race before the delay, and of course can't leave out ARCA there for whatever that's worth, but overall really good weekend, though. I'm excited to for y'all to see my Dover content. A lot of it won't get out, unfortunately, till probably next week, and because finals week here at school, but otherwise, though, I'm doing great.
Glad to hear. I do not envy you, though, but final season, I just wrapped mine up recently, and I want to give a huge shout out to, of course, Professor Leah Stacy for doing a superb job teaching and overseeing our grad school class, digital storytelling. So hope to see more Professor Stacy in our school. And Nathan, best of luck with your finals and a lot of other things in the pipeline for you on campus. And of course, the next countdown for your next NASCAR race, which I anticipate being the Ambetter 301 at New Hampshire Motor Speedway. That's a hard name to get used to saying. I'm used to saying the casino name instead, but looking forward to that and your content from Dover. And for this show, it's going to be a great one because we've got Kaz Grala, a fellow Bostonian, joining us today. So it's been weeks and weeks and weeks of New Yorkers. Well, finally, Massachusetts is here to prevail. So I'm not so sure if he talks about the Red Sox. In fact, for you folks at home or wherever you are listening to our show, I'm also going to be listening to this interview for the first time ever. So I'm excited to hear what Nathan and Kaz talked about. As you know, Kaz has kind of been a utility player this year, racing in the Truck Series of Young Motorsports, and in the Xfinity Series, kind of a smorgasbord of schedules, if you will. At Dover, at least, he was racing for Big Machine Racing, of course, in the number 48 car. So Growla is getting a lot of reps out there. And I'm really looking forward to hearing what Nathan talked about with him at Dover. And just for you folks at home to know more about this really cool, suave Bostonian race car driver. Now, before we begin the podcast in anger, of course, like I always say on every single one of these TPF live recordings and podcasts, if you are looking for the latest diecast cars from Lionel Racing with NASCAR offerings or with Greenlight Collectibles, IndyCar, movie and TV show, and everything in between type of diecast cars, head on over to CircleBDiecast.com, and if you spend $30 or more on in-stock items or pre-order items that are shipping at the same time, you can get free shipping by using promo code TPF2022. That's promo code TPF2022 to get free shipping on all in-stock items or pre-order items shipping at the same time, as long as your order total is $30 or more. Tell Brent and the team that Rob Tiongson and Nathan Solomon sent you over to get some goodies and probably get some explaining to do, unless you're getting Mother's Day presents. And yes, for the mothers at home, Nathan and I and all the folks on the TPF team wish our mothers a very happy Mother's Day. Well, with that, folks, hopefully that does make up for you folks not getting a Hallmark or shoebox card for your mom, because we are going to get started with Podium Perspectives. Well, Dover Motor Speedway is never short on action. Well, maybe in 2018 per se, but 2022's lone race weekend produced a lot of action, a lot of interesting situations, and of course, unfortunately, the dreaded loose wheel. But at least on the action side of things, for the Cup side of the racing weekend, Mother Nature, of course, let everyone know by lap 78 that she had too much fun on Sunday and therefore sent Nathan and a lot of other folks going home. But for those who could make it back to the racetrack on Monday, it was pretty awesome stuff to see. Drivers searching for different grooves, drivers running into issues, drivers making incredible saves like Kyle Larson somehow avoiding the front stretch wall and only suffering cosmetic damage to go lap down, but get that lucky dog, and wound up finishing in sixth place. Martin Truex Jr. was looking to get another podium finish at Dover before Ross Chastain does what Ross Chastain always does. And Martin Truex Jr. and Ross Chastain decided to talk about fishing on pit road after the race. Maybe not, I don't know. That's according to Ross Chastain. But I'll tell you who was one really happy individual after the Dover race weekend wrapped up. That's, of course, Chase Elliott and his number 9 Napa Auto Parts Hendrick Motorsports team. They won their first race since July 4th of last year, which, of course, was that amazing race at Road America, in which he destroyed all of his tires and needed a tow truck ride back to the front straightaway. But also, it was his first oval victory since Phoenix Raceway in the season finale 500K on November 8th of 2020. That was 546 days ago. Nathan, I don't even know what the heck you were doing there in that day. But I mean, from what you caught of Dover at the racetrack, and then, of course, listening to it on campus or watching it on campus, what are your overall impressions of the Cup race? I mean, that was not your usual round 11, I would say.
Yeah, I thought overall it was a pretty good race. Like, you know, you obviously just mentioned a lot of it. Obviously, a lot of stuff happened. There is multiple grooves and overall pretty good racing. Obviously, tires were certainly an issue in many regards. Obviously, the wear was one of them. But we'll talk a little bit about that a little later on. But yeah, overall, I was pretty satisfied with the race. Selfishly, I'd like to see Dover get 2 dates again so I could have another Northeast. More Northeast races, how about that? Because I think we've talked about this before on the show. There used to be like 7 Northeast races, now we're down to 4. So obviously with the early Northeast race, kind of wish there was another one later in the year. But I think they put on a good show, though. I mean, it's too bad that not more people could not have watched it, because I think it less than 1 million people it drew on Monday, unfortunately. But that's just what's going to happen with rain delay races, unfortunately. Is what it is. But yeah, Chase Elliott, obviously a really big win for him. Like you mentioned, first oval win since the championship race. you know, he tried to play it off like it wasn't a huge deal, but I think it was probably eating at him a little bit, that the fact that he went, you know, 50 races without winning on an oval. So pretty impressive that that streak had been that long. But, you know, obviously, you know, Elliott wins to break that streak. And, you know, nothing really changed in the standings either. Elliott was actually the points leader, despite not having a win yet this year before this race. So obviously, he exits as the points leader as well. So no changes to the playoff grid. But Dover put on a good show, and I think it'll be around for a little while longer.
Absolutely. And with SMI now running the show for Dover Motor Speedway, you know that Marcus Smith and his team are going to do a whale of a job promoting the race and making sure that those fans in Delaware and the Northeast have a great little racetrack to get to watch at least every spring. Now, certainly, I would agree with you, Nathan. I do think it does deserve a second race date. But I've got to ask a sub question to this, and I think I know the answer to this question, but I might as well ask, because I know a lot of folks talked about this on the social media side of things. Do we need to have races on the East Coast without lights, tracks without lights starting at 3 p.m. Eastern, or should we go back to the days of 1 p.m.?
Well, I think regardless of what we want, it's never going to happen because it's not NASCAR's choice. It's TV's choice. NASCAR starts the races whenever TV says. So TV says we're starting the race at 3 o'clock, then we're starting the race at 3 o'clock. NASCAR's going to do whatever they have to do to make sure it fits the TV window that they need. Now, there's only, I mean, look at the schedule, some of the races later in the year are 2 o'clock starts, like daylight issues and everything. So that's certainly understandable. I wish they were 1 o'clock starts for East Coast races, but I understand why they're 3 o'clock starts. So you can maximize the TV window and, you know, so West Coast people can watch it. But I don't really see that happening very often. Like, you know, Dover, I knew going in, like, if this race gets delayed at all, like, there's a very good chance that it's just going to get washed out, which is exactly what happened. You know, you look at Pocono as another example, you know, 3:30 starts there, and that's a 2.5 mile track, which takes 2 hours to dry. Watkins Glen, 3:30 starts, a 2.5 mile track that takes 2 hours to dry. I mean, obviously, that's a little bit different because it's a road course and it's a shorter race. But the point's still valid. I wish we did 1 o'clock starts for East Coast races, but it's never going to happen.
True, because as Lewis Hamilton will say, and this is not a rag on NASCAR, of course, cash is king. And of course, the networks getting all those piles of money with their deals and the tracks as well. Of course, they're going to make it profitable, even if it comes at the sacrifice of having a great race like Dover, having to start later and, of course, get at risk of having to be run on a Monday. But I'm glad it was a good race, but hopefully Dover gets a little bit more good luck in terms of the weather side of things for future races, because that's a great facility. I know that Marcus Smith, rather, and his team are going to do a fantastic job managing that facility for the years to come. Now, speaking of managing, we're going to talk about tire wear and tires falling off. I can't believe we're doing this on race number 11 on our TPF live show, but it's crazy to think that the teams and drivers, or at least the teams at least, have not figured out how to tighten those wheels, or if they're not figuring it out, that they're rushing through it, because we saw a lot of teams having tire issues on Sunday and onto Monday, namely the number 11 team of Denny Hamlin. They won stage one, after Monday's race resumed, of course, and then when they had the first pit stop between the stage breaks, Denny Hamlin, I think, was going to win the race off pit road, or was close to winning the race off pit road, and then, of course, his tire picked a fine time to leave him, which unfortunately results in a month vacation for Chris Gabehart, and now he's going to be without him, and as of press time, I do not know who his crew chief will be for Darlington through the 600. And then, of course, tire management, because, wow, did we see a lot of good drivers run into issues because they just weren't managing their tires well. And it's weird to say that Dover would eat up tires, but, of course, with Goodyear having a somewhat softer compound, that would result in drivers who may have pushed the limits or teams being a little bit aggressive on their setups to see these tire issues. It's not a byproduct of Goodyear not bringing a good tire, but more or less pushing it beyond what it can do. And overall, you know, typically I would be talking about tire management with Darlington, which we know is a really, you know, abrasive surface. But Dover, I mean, I know, Nathan, you probably got a chance to look at the track surface more than most folks can. I wouldn't say visually it looks like it's really abrasive, but you know, the Monster Mile rather really ate up a lot of tires, I would say. Are you a little bit surprised that we saw a lot of these mistakes by these great teams that really at this point should know a little better about getting these four tire pit stops done?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of tire wear, maybe a little bit. Obviously, those concrete surfaces overall, they kind of wear a little bit more than asphalt surfaces. And that Dover surface is starting to get kind of on the older side. So you really saw a lot of wear, obviously, especially in the cup race. You saw a lot of cording on the tires, which is really surprising. I don't think you'd seen that much cording in a race in a long time. So tires are falling off. They're definitely putting grip down there, which is kind of weird because some races tires are falling off and some races they aren't, like Martinsville they weren't, which is not right because Martinsville with turns that sharp and everything, like a 180 degree turn, there should be tire fall off. Terms of loose wheels, well, first I'm going to back up to Saturday, because in both the Xfinity race and the Cup Series race, the stage one winner lost a tire on pit road. So Sam Ayer won stage one of the Xfinity race, lost tire in pit road. Taylor Moyer and members of that team will get a four-week vacation. Really, six-week vacation because of two off weeks. And now the same thing for Chris Gabehart, the 11 team, and also the same thing for the 16 team for Colleague Racing. I mean, that's another bummer for the A.J. Allmendinger team. I mean, A.J. looked to have top 10 speed, most likely. Then they lost tire and they had some suspension or brake issues, and which resulted in DNF and a very unhappy AJ. So yeah, definitely a lot of tire issues altogether between the cording and then people not getting the, you know, the tires on the wheels. So kind of concerning that this is the race that we've had the most tire issues with, and we've had tire issues in nearly every race. I don't know what NASCAR can do to make it better. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know how they can make it better.
I mean, the Xfinity side, I can forgive a tire changer for messing up a lug nut because there's five of them. I think you pointed it out on our race chat. But in the Cup side, it's only one lug nut. So, I mean, kind of inexcusable to have a loose wheel. So, you know, that month off that they'll get is probably going to make them think things over. But of course, just like the drivers, these pit crew members are going to push the limits. And if that means skirting the rules or, you know, getting your driver in trouble, I guess that's going to be the price to try to win a race or beat the competitors off pit road. So Denny Hamlin, who was the stage one winner, ended up finishing 21st. And his long season of unusual inconsistencies continues. But as far as Chase Elliott's concerned, his consistent season, it could not get any better. He looks like he's racing like his father, Bill, right now, in terms of just being steady, getting, you know, workmanlike top five finishes that, you know, at the end of the season, it will offset having a lot of wins, but a lot of DNFs when we get to the playoff time. And let's actually look at the top 10 finishing order here for the Duramax Drydene 400. I did not mess the title of the race as I thought I would. Elliott, of course, took his first race win of the year. And second place was Ricky Stenhouse Jr., which was a really uplifting finish for JTG Doherty Racing. Ross Chastain, like I mentioned earlier, kind of had a little bit of a shenanigans with Martin Truex Jr., ended up finishing third. And then rounding up the top 10 included Christopher Bell with another great finish, Alex Bowman, the defending race winner, Kyle Larson overcoming a spin in stage two and somehow not hitting the front stretch wall, getting that sixth place finish, Kyle Busch, who was looking like the man to beat, leading the most laps, wound up finishing in seventh, and then Chris Buescher, the pole sitter, in eighth, Kevin Harvick with a quiet ninth place finish, and then an attaboy to Eric Jones and the number 43 team, getting a nice top 10 finish. They look like they could be a leading midfield team, and with a few breaks in the race, you just never know if they could be that spoiler team that makes it to the 16 driver field for the playoffs to be kicking off in September. And yes, It is never too early to talk about playoffs here on TPF Live. Well, for the podcast side of things, we've got a few more topics to go here. So let's keep the topics and themes still to Dover for this next one. And that's, of course, concerning the Xfinity race with Junior Motorsports. You know, they didn't quite get the 1-2-3-4 finish like Hendrick Motorsport did in the Cup race last year, but it was pretty damn close enough. I mean, we saw Josh Berry win his first race of the season, and it seems like Josh Berry is, you know, wiping away the label that he's just a short track specialist because he's able to win almost anywhere now. And then, of course, in that Xfinity race, you know, we saw Justin Allgaier look really strong. We saw Sam Mayer look really strong too, and Noah Gragson, even though he had an off race day, you know, as Nathan asked during the press conference following Saturday's race, Noah feels like he's in a great spot and his team is having a bunch of fun with their races. In terms of the top 10 finishing order for the A-Game 200, of course, Josh Berry won with Justin Allgaier and Ty Gibbs in the podium finishing spots. Rounding out the top 10, of course, is Noah Gragson, Sam Mayer, AJ Allmendinger, the points leader, Brandon Jones, the Martinsville race winner, Sheldon Creed, the 2020 Truck Series champion, Riley Herbst, and Ryan Sieg. And Ryan Sieg, this guy needs more publicity. I don't know. I mean, he's just doing such spectacular things for such a small team, and I don't know how they keep doing it, but it's just amazing. But in terms of Junior Motorsports, Nathan, I mean, they are just starting to fire off on all cylinders. They look so sturdy, ready to win. You know, Noah has his hot streak. Now, Josh Berry's reminding us why Dale's put him in that number eight car. I mean, and also, too, they got William Byron, Chase Elliott, and Kyle Larson in that all-star car later this season. So, I mean, would you say the sky's the limit for Junior Motorsports right now in the Xfinity Series?
Yeah, absolutely. They had a really good weekend, a really huge weekend for them. I mean, you kind of look at guys like Justin Allgaier. I don't think he got off to the best start or quite to the start that he wanted, and kind of same as Josh Berry. But obviously, they finished 1-2. I think Allgaier probably had the car to beat on Saturday. And Josh Berry was able to kind of get in front and get that clean air and really hold on and navigate lap traffic better, too, because lap traffic was an issue in both races as well. Because really for both Cup and Xfinity, Dover, like the speeds are like a mile and a half oval, but at the same time, it also kind of races like Bristol on steroids. So, definitely hard to get around that place for sure, you know, with the banking and everything, but JR Motorsports, they found it. I mean, like I mentioned, Barry and Allgaier 1-2, Gragson and, I don't know why the last name just slipped my mind. Sam Mayer, 4 and 5. Mayer did a heck of a job recovering from losing that tire in stage one to get a top five. And I think Mayer probably would have won that race because I think he had the best car of all four of them, honestly. If he doesn't lose that tire, then he stays up in the top five all day and I think probably wins that race. So with a lot of more traditional tracks coming up in the Xfinity Series, I think JR Motorsports is in a really good spot. Obviously Darlington this weekend, and that's a place I think they've been pretty good at before. So, and then of course, yeah, you mentioned the all-star car. Chase Elliott will be in there this weekend, fresh off the Dover win. So they'll have five chances to chase trophies. And also let me mention, certainly not a promotion whatsoever, but you mentioned the A-Game 200, of course. A-Game is an energy drink sponsor. They had them available in the media center this weekend. Had to try one. They are quite good. So I do recommend.
Well, I guess I should try it out myself if it's that good. And I should probably let go of my bitter hatred of Johnny Damon at this point because it's been a long time since he decided to become a New York Yankee. But keeping it back to the race, of course, I mean, yeah, I think you're right about it. Junior Motorsports, of course, once they start to find momentum, they cannot stop winning races. And I mean, Justin Allgaier, for some reason, is a notoriously slow starter. But once he gets the victory lane or gets those top five finishes, it's pretty hard to knock him out of that particular running order. And Sam Mayer, of course, it's funny how the consistent theme around him on our show before, you know, recent races has been, oh, poor Sam Mayer. You know, great stage one and stage two. And in stage three, it all goes to hell for him. But and it almost did, too, again at Dover. But he looks like he's ready to win a race here shortly. And Noah Gragson, of course, I would say, like he said in his response to your question on Saturday, I totally agree that he is maturing as a race car driver, and it looks like he's learning to fight his battles quite nicely. Darlington, as far as I'm concerned for the Xfinity race, I would not, you know, be surprised if Justin Allgaier defends his race win. And overall, I would say the Junior Motorsports team has done their homework as far as the throwback paint schemes are concerned. And actually, that is the topic of our last topic here on the Podium Perspectives. Darlington, of course. Nathan and I will share, of course, our two surefire picks and two dark horse driver picks. But I'll start things off, of course, with it being throwback weekend. Let's talk about our favorite throwback paint scheme. Now, as of today, on Tuesday, we saw a lot of the Cup teams reveal their throwback paint schemes. And recently, Trackhouse Racing Team, I think, takes the cake with their Coca-Cola-themed race cars that replicates what Dale Earnhardt Jr. and the late Dale Earnhardt Sr. ran at Twin Ring Motegi for the NASCAR Thunder Special Race in 1998. If you haven't seen it, folks, they're both beautiful race cars. And no, this show is not sponsored by A-Game or Coca-Cola, so I'm not being paid to say this, of course. And if we were, Nathan and I are expecting our royalty checks right now. But anyways, as far as I'm concerned, being unbiased, as far as the throwback paint schemes are concerned, I really love seeing the Coca-Cola paint schemes again for Ross Chastain and Daniel Suarez. Now, just talking Cup and Xfinity, and I think the truck race as well, if I'm not mistaken. For the Cup race, of course, I think you can't be too far off to think that a Hendrick Motorsports driver will win, but I'm not going to say Kyle Larson because that's what I always do every race weekend, and I'm going to change it up, and I'll stick with Hendrick Motorsports, but I'm going to say Chase Elliott is going to learn something from that Xfinity race to win on Sunday. But as far as a backup pick is concerned from the surefire side of things, you can't go wrong with Martin Truex Jr. We saw how he was able to stave off Larson in traffic last year. So Truex and Elliott would be my two surefire picks. Now, dark horse picks for the Cup race, I think you can't look any further than Austin Cindric, if he can keep it off the wall, and Tyler Reddick. He's due a victory here in the Cup series. Xfinity, just, you know, one race pick and then a dark horse pick for the Xfinity race. Justin Allgaier, dark horse pick for Xfinity. I would probably have to say, just kind of shooting in the dark, kind of hard to call him a dark horse, but Brandon Jones for that. And then in the truck race, just to make a race pick, that's a tough one. But Corey Heim, I think, is going to be my truck race winner for Darlington. But yeah, Nathan, you've got a tall task right now to talk about picks and throwback paint schemes.
Sure. So I'll start with the paint schemes. Obviously, you kind of took mine with Trackhouse. I do like those a lot. The other one I really like, truck series throwback, Stuart Friesen. He's doing a throwback to Jack Johnson. I believe he's a former Northeast dirt racer. Look, the truck looks really good. I don't really know how to describe it. But like I have like a rendering of it in front of me. It looks awesome. And I remember seeing that on Twitter last week. It's like, man, this looks really good. So I like that one for picks. Oh man. So for Cup surefire picks, I'll go with a couple veterans, Kevin Harvick, Denny Hamlin. Darlington's one of the toughest tracks to get around. It takes a lot of experience to get around that place. You typically don't see a whole lot of upset winners there. We've seen a few before. We saw an Eric Jones upset and a Regan Smith upset there. But I'll go with a couple of veterans as my two picks for some of your underdogs. I'll go with Eric Jones and Tyler Reddick. They've both been running well all year. Obviously both hungry for wins. Reddick hungry for his first win. Xfinity pick an underdog. Oh man, I'll pick the trendy pick, Chase Elliott, to win the Xfinity race. Underdog pick, if you will. Daniel Hamrick. I mean, I guess he's more of a contender, but I don't think people still expect him to win every week. And then just to throw a truck pick out there, I'll go with Ben Rhodes.
Those are solid choices right there. And I don't think you're far off to call Daniel Hamrick a dark horse pick just because his only win in his Xfinity career was, of course, last year's championship race. So, and he had to kind of bang wheels to win that championship and the race from Austin Cindric. So I actually think those are some really good picks. And Chase Elliott winning the Xfinity race, would not be surprised. He did so in 2014 which of course was, I think, one of his first Xfinity race wins ever in his career. So I don't think it's too far off. I wish we could show the fans at home like a throwback picture, but this is a radio/podcast show, so kind of hard to do so unless we do like a YouTube show type of thing, like Conan O'Brien's Conan Needs a Friend. So maybe one of these days Rob Needs a Friend type of segment. But yeah, folks, we have a lot to talk about next week, of course, when Darlington is in the books. So it should be a really great race weekend for the Goodyear 400, which, of course, you can catch on FS1 at 3:30 Eastern time, rather, with the pre-race show at 3 o'clock. And yes, folks, watch the NASCAR race. I know, you know, the Miami Grand Prix is going on for F1, but, you know, this is a NASCAR show, so, you know, watch the race. The F1 race, you know who's going to win, so you never know who's going to win Darlington. So there's my incentive, and that's about the best I can do. If you enjoyed this particular segment and you want to hear different topics for next weekend, please tweet to us. My handle is at Rob T. Oxen. Nathan's is at NSolly02. And our general Twitter handle is at The Podium Finish. So that is the Podium Perspective segment for this week. Let's move on ahead and get to the hot seat. Well, normally I take the lead on this because most of the interviews that we've been doing lately are double billing. So Nathan and I typically share responsibilities of this, but I was not at Dover this weekend. It was actually Nathan this time who was there for his second race of the year. And Nathan, as I understand, you got to catch up with Kaz Perala, I believe on Friday afternoon, just before, of course, practice and qualifying kicked off at the racetrack. So why don't you tell the folks at campus and at home more about that interview?
Sure. Yeah. So obviously, you know, like you mentioned earlier in the show, Kaz Perala, he did a couple of races with Big Machine Racing and the 48 car in the NASCAR Xfinity Series. So Dover was the second race of basically a 2-race deal. So I was able to catch up with him, like you said, before practice and qualifying. Had a good chat about, you know, his career, you know, growing up in the New England area. And then certainly added some of the fun questions there at the end that I'm sure at least Rob, you'll get a kick out of. So the interview went really well. Obviously it's great talking with him, went pretty long too. So grab some popcorn because I think you guys are going to enjoy this one. So I guess without further ado, we'll roll right into the hot seat interview with Kaz Perala.
So Kaz, to start, you made your debut with Big Machine Racing last weekend at Talladega. I know you got caught up in a crash, but kind of just how would you evaluate your first race here with this team?
Well, Talladega. Talladega is Talladega. We didn't come out on the right end of it. We hoped we did. We thought we were in a good spot too, actually. You know, I think we could have gotten a really good finish there, but we got clipped by the 19, and that was the end of our day. But I'd evaluate it as going really well overall, because I really liked working with all these guys over here. I felt like the communication was good. You know, the camaraderie was good. I think that these guys are capable of a lot, and I think these race cars are good. They've got a really good deal going with RCR, with some information sharing. I feel like they're in a good position to be able to capitalize this year and get some results. And yeah, Talladega is that's a tough race to start at for an evaluation, because really anything can happen there. But this weekend at Dover, I'm looking for being much more of a normal race to really see where the cars are, where the speed is, and to try to get a good finish. We've seen there's been some carnage here in the past, but it's certainly no Talladega. So we expect to be able to have a good clean weekend. And if we do that, then we'll get a good idea of what the team's able to do. But I've got really high hopes for all of us.
Sure. And you mentioned the RCR Alliance. Obviously, you spent time at RCR. How does it feel to be back within that Chevy RCR group?
Oh, it's great. Yeah, a lot of the people that Big Machine Racing works with directly on the RCR Xfinity side are people that I've worked with for years and have known. They know me. So it's been great. It kind of feels like a little bit of a homecoming, and some more races with the guys that I've really wanted to do more races with and work with before. Yeah, I've loved working with RCR. I would love to drive more races on that campus whenever I have the opportunity. So this opportunity with Big Machine Racing is a really big one for me, and I'd love to do a good job for them, to impress them, and who knows, maybe get to drive this car some more times this year.
And kind of how did this opportunity start to come about? Did it come pretty quickly for you?
Very quickly, probably the quickest I've ever had anything come together. I got a call from Patrick Donahue over the weekend about 2 weeks ago now, and I didn't know Patrick. I knew of him, but I didn't know him personally. I didn't have his phone number. I just got a call from a random number. I picked it up, and he said, "Hey, it's Patrick Donahue from Big Machine Racing. Do you have anything going on in Xfinity at Talladega and Dover?" And I'm like, "No, why?" So I was like, "Wow, this is a really cool opportunity that really came out of nowhere for me." But I think it's going to be good for everybody involved. I know for me, any races that I'm able to get are a bonus for me. And this year so far has been much busier for me than the last couple have. So I'm really, really grateful for the rides that I've gotten so far this year, and this Big Machine Racing ride is definitely a huge opportunity for me. So I'm gonna try to do everything I can to get a good run for these guys tomorrow.
And you said the call came the off weekend?
It did, yeah. Yes, the weekend before Bristol.
Gotcha.
Dirt.
Okay.
So they had one off weekend after I found out to kind of get everything ready, get my seats up to the shop, get fitted in the car. And we're off and running for Talladega the next week.
What are you looking forward to most about this weekend at Dover?
I love Dover. I really love this track. It's so much fun. I've done well here before. I've finished second in K&N here. I finished 10th and second in my two truck races here. And then I had a mechanical failure here the first time in Xfinity. And then I got run into by somebody else the one time I drove for RCR here in Xfinity. So this track has been good to me. Had, like I mentioned, a little bit of bad luck here and there, but when we finish, we run well. I feel like I'm always up front when it comes crunch time at this place. So, you know, every driver's kind of got those couple of tracks that they feel like, you know, on a day where nothing goes wrong, they just are up front. And for me, Dover is one of those tracks. So I'm hoping that it'll be good to us tomorrow. Hopefully the monster takes it easy on us and we don't have any bad luck. I know this team, gosh, they've had such great speed all year, but they cannot catch a break with wrecking. I feel like they've torn up way more stuff than what they should, and I don't think they've gotten the results to show for their efforts this year and how well they've done. So Talladega, unfortunately, got caught up again. So definitely want to leave here tomorrow without a wrecked race car and with a good finish for all these guys, because they certainly deserve it.
So you grew up in the New England area, the Boston area. You raced go-karts there. Kind of just talk a little bit about how you got into racing and your journey into NASCAR.
Yeah, I started when I was 4 years old in go-karts on road courses. So there's some guys that started like that. I feel like nowadays most of the guys that make it to the top in NASCAR came from dirt or from short tracks. So I did come from road courses initially, but the first time I drove an oval, I was 9 years old. I tested Austin Cindric's Bandolero at the fifth mile behind Charlotte Motor Speedway. That was my very, very first time on an oval, and it was then that I transitioned to the more traditional asphalt short track side, racing Bandoleros, Legend cars, late models, up through K&N and then trucks. So I personally have driven more laps on short tracks than probably any type of track out there, because that really is what I cut my teeth on as I came up through the ranks. So you know, from there it was a more traditional ascent, but my dad used to race sports cars, and so that was kind of how I was familiar with racing and with road courses from a young age. So being from Boston, racing really wasn't super common as a four-year-old to go do. That was pretty unique. So if it wasn't for my dad, I'm sure I never would have gotten into this.
What does it mean to kind of represent, you know, young go-kart racers from Boston, from formerly F1 Boston in the NASCAR Cup Series, and in NASCAR overall to be a competitive driver?
Well, it's really cool, and you know, I mentioned racing isn't as common or as popular up in Boston, but I've always said this about New England race fans. I think they're the most passionate. I think they're the most into it. They may not have the sheer numbers that they have down south, but there's no one more into it than our Northerners, and we feel that every time we go to New Hampshire Motor Speedway, here at Dover, Watkins Glen, the Northeast does love their racing, and so there's plenty of kids that race go-karts, that race short tracks, they race late models, and all around the Northeast, and I think some of them feel like it's a little tougher to make it in NASCAR because you're not down south, you're not kind of in the heart of NASCAR country, but I love being able to represent that region of the country out here, because there's only a few of us up in the National Series that come from the Northeast, so it is really cool to get to kind of carry one of those torches for that region, and hopefully inspire more kids up there to push for their dreams and make it, because they absolutely can.
Absolutely, and over the course of your NASCAR career, you've only held one full-time ride in NASCAR. How difficult has it been to grow and develop as a driver under some of those circumstances?
Really hard. There are guys that made it to the Xfinity level before me, or the same time as me, or a year after me, that have 3, 4, 5 times the experience that I do now in number of races, just because the full season, really, that just comes down to money. That comes down to sponsorship, and I haven't really been able to find myself at the right place at the right time with the right sponsor to have a full-time ride since 2017, but I'd like to think that I'm able to make an impact and turn some heads when I do get opportunities, and I've definitely had some shining moments, even just as a part-time driver, that have helped keep my name in the mix and put me on the map, and have absolutely led to more opportunities. There's a couple key performances that I've had in my career that I feel like have led me to be, say, in the position I'm in now with these guys here at Big Machine, that probably wouldn't be here without some of the things that went right throughout my career. So I'd love to have a full-time ride again someday. That's what I've been working towards for years, but I feel like even just having those individual races where you're able to show what you can do, showcase that, can prove to be really valuable, and this weekend at Dover really is no exception. If we go out, we have an excellent day tomorrow, that could definitely lead to more opportunities, possibly more opportunities right here in the 48 car. So at the end of the day, what I can focus on is my job as the driver to go out and perform, and the money stuff, the full-time ride, I feel like if you focus on your job as the driver and your performance, that stuff will all come together naturally. So I'm focused on that and gonna try to do the best that I can do.
When you have some of these one-off or two-off opportunities, if you will, like this, do you put extra pressure on yourself, or do you approach it the same way as any other race?
I've done that in the past, and it doesn't work. I did that with RCR in my first 5 races. I had a 5-race season with them, and I definitely put more pressure on myself. I basically tried to try harder. I learned that does not work. In fact, that's how you make mistakes, and you're going to end up finishing worse. So, unfortunately, I have kind of gotten used to this part-time mentality, which is different than a full-time mentality. You have to just take what the car is going to give you on those days where you might be able to push a little harder to try to get that one spot. If you're a part-time guy and you're trying to make an impact, maybe you have to settle in and take what the car will give you and not make that last push if you know you're going to really put the car at risk or put your result at risk. I absolutely want to do well here for Big Machine Racing, and I'm going to do everything in my power to do that, but I don't think I can put added pressure on myself, because our sport alone, racing professionally, there's enough inherent pressure. We don't need to put extra pressure on ourselves. The pressure exists, and the best drivers know how to handle that, harness it, and be able to get the best that their car can get that day. So, that's what I'm going to do tomorrow. I'm just going to drive like I know how to drive and not do anything different, because you kind of have to have some confidence in yourself and what you can do, because if you've made it to this point, then you must at least kind of know what you're doing. So stick to what you know, drive you know, the way you drive and see where it all shakes out. And hopefully tomorrow that's going to be a good result.
Last couple of seasons, you've made the Daytona 500 for a couple different teams, this year with the money team, Floyd Mayweather. Talk about, you know, that opportunity and driving in that race the last couple of years.
Yeah, I like to do it the stressful way, apparently. It would be nice to go into the Daytona 500 someday with a charter and not have to worry that week, but the last 2 years we've gone in as an open car and having to make the race. And gosh, the Daytona 500 is like the hardest race of the year in any series to try to make because of the format and the way you have to get in. And the last couple of years, it's been stacked with the open teams have been great cars, great drivers. And both years, I've had a large portion of the duel where it looks like I'm not going to make it, and then something goes right in the end and pull through in some clutch fashion and all of a sudden get into the race. So, yeah, I look forward to the day that maybe it doesn't have to be that exciting for me to try to get into the race. But, it's a super cool opportunity. And Floyd Mayweather, he's been talking about getting into the sport for a couple of years now. Those rumors have been flying around. So to be the guy behind the wheel when that finally did all come together, it has been really cool. And hopefully you'll see us on track at least a couple more times this year in the number 50 car. I love working with everybody over there. And Floyd, it's been super cool working with him and with his team directly. So I think that's another team, much like these guys at Big Machine, that there's a lot of potential there. You know, it's a big future opportunity that over the next couple of seasons they could build up their sponsorship list and start competing more and more often, maybe get to be full time, and absolutely has a lot of potential. So I'm grateful to be in a position this year to drive for some excellent teams like Young's Motorsports and Trucks too. Gonna get to drive about a dozen races for those guys this year. So I feel really good about where I've been all year this year. If you followed along with my results at all, I can't seem to have anything go right so far this year. We've had all sorts of just random problems, on-track issues. I've yet to have a clean, problem-free race, I think, this year. But I guess tomorrow's a good day to start. So if we can have a clean race, and I'm sure we'll get a good finish and hopefully be able to turn my luck around a little bit this year. But, yeah, I'm in a good position in all three series with great teams, people I love working with, and hopefully can be great future opportunities as well.
I'm sure 5 years ago you never imagined you'd be driving for Floyd Mayweather, right?
No, probably 5 months ago I wouldn't have even imagined that. So definitely been really cool, and I hope to get to drive for him and his team as long as they want me.
What do you hope to accomplish here in NASCAR over the next couple of seasons?
Well, I'd like to get that full-time ride. My dream growing up, as many of ours, you know, in this sport have been, is to make it professionally as a full-time Cup driver. I want to make a career out of this. I want to make it, as they say. And to me, that means being a full-time Cup driver, being a championship contender, make the playoffs in the Cup Series. Well, all of that starts with maybe getting a full-time season in Xfinity or in Trucks. And you got to work your way there and crawl before you walk before you run. And I have been able to get some starts in the Cup Series, and hopefully we'll continue to get starts in the Cup Series. But I by no means think that I've graduated from the Xfinity Series or graduated from the Truck Series. I would absolutely love to drive full-time in one of these series over the next couple of years. So, you know, over the next few seasons, I have my end goal of where I'd like to be. I'd like to be a Cup driver, but there's a million different ways that I could get there. So racing for these guys, Big Machine and Xfinity, it may be the start of that. You know, I don't know what their future holds. They might be a Cup team 5 years from now. They may have a charter 5 years from now. So I treat every opportunity like, you know, this could be where I retire from. This could be my 10 or 15 season race team.
You just never know.
You just never know. And you have to race as if it is. You have to be all in. You know, even though I am driving for multiple teams and multiple series this year, you have to be all in with all of them. You know, you got to have that relationship, that chemistry, that communication with each one for each weekend. And you're all in with these guys. When I'm at the track, in the hauler, you know, flying to the races with these guys. I am a part of this team as fully as you possibly can be, and you know, we'll live and die with each other. So I love the support I've gotten from everybody on Big Machine Racing so far, and hopefully can get them a good result, because I feel like as a team, even though I've only been a part of the team for a week and a half, I just feel like, you know, that would be a really great first step with these guys towards possibly getting more races. So that's the goal.
What's one thing in racing that you haven't done that you'd like to do? It can be anything.
Well, I would say win a cup race. That's easy. Not easy to do. That's an easy answer. but I'd like to win a championship too, because I feel like actually as I was growing up racing at different levels when I was younger, I won a lot of championships because I felt like I have a really good big picture mentality when it comes to racing. I used to win a lot of races at the lower levels, and I used to be able to take what the car would give me. You know, if that was a third that day, that was a third. If it was a fourth, it was a fourth. And that's a great way to points race, and sets you up really well for having a consistent upfront season. And I haven't, as we mentioned, had the opportunity to have that full season in several years now. So I feel like that is one of my strengths as a race car driver that I haven't really been able to showcase for a few years now, but it's there. And so, you know, I'm trying to make these impressions in part-time seasons, but I do think that in the right place with the right group, I could absolutely be a championship contender in any of the series, and I hope to be able to get that opportunity to show that, to make the playoffs, to run for a championship over the next couple of years, because I do think that I can do that. I believe in myself. So if that's in the Xfinity series in the next couple of years, that would be fantastic.
This next question's from our editor-in-chief, Rob Tiongson. He wants to know, would you think of any songs from any musical genres that you enjoy? What is a song you have considered in your mind to be the quintessential Kaz Grala thematic song?
Oh my gosh. Well, that's quite the question. First of all, that's a mouthful of a question. Man, that's a tough answer. I don't know that I have that one queued up. What songs do I love right now? It's a good question. Can't even think of what I listen to right now. No, I have no idea. I have no good answer to that, honestly. What I usually... Well, I will say this. My genre of music, which I guess people probably wouldn't think, is rap. That's what I always listen to. And it's great for getting hyped to get in a race car. So, you know, songs like by Post Malone or Big Sean, I think that those are the best kind of hype songs. So, I don't know. I definitely am a fan of Big Sean, and he's got a couple songs that I really like. But I think Deep is one that comes to mind. Okay. That's a really good one. I feel like that would be a great theme song. Like, it's just super hype and sounds like you're badass and ready to get in a race car. So
that's your go-to pre-race song?
Yeah, I guess so. You know, I'm not... I walked to the grid last week for Talladega behind Noah Gragson, and he's got, like, this Bluetooth speaker blasting music as he walks onto the grid. I'm like, no, I've never really done that. I'm not really a pre-race music guy. I'll tell you what my pre-race more consists of, especially like a big race like the Daytona 500, is much like this. Just come up front here and kind of decompress for an hour before the race, because the energy level, the excitement from the fans, especially at a sold-out Daytona 500, like, it is so energetic, so chaotic, which is the coolest thing in the world. It's the coolest environment. But you do not want to strap into a race car, like, wired, hyped up. You might think, like, you would think that you would want to. It seems like you'd want to get into a race car with a ton of energy, like, let's go. It's really the opposite. You kind of want to get in and be totally relaxed. Like, for you to do your job and be able to execute without making any mistakes, you do need to be relaxed, focused. That's the number one thing. So I like to kind of take an hour to just have some quiet decompression time, maybe chat with the guys a little bit pre-race, but get away from the chaos that's outside in the infield and in the grandstands, and it's good to kind of relax. So talking about a hype song, I'm honestly the opposite. Okay. I'd be like no music, like kind of just rest and relax, enjoy myself pre-race. I feel like that's what gets me in the best mindset to go out and do my job.
And my last question, you know, the world wants to know, will the Celtics beat the Bucks in the NBA playoffs?
Oh, buddy, you are asking the wrong person. I was just talking to these guys this morning. They're like, well, are you a diehard Patriots fan? I'm like, honestly, yeah, I'm a fan of all Boston teams. And I watched some games, but I wouldn't call myself a diehard anything. Yeah, I don't watch a season of football or a season of basketball or hockey or anything. All of my family does, and they're super into it. I've got some cousins that are like diehard Bruins fans that watch every hockey game. I'm a race guy. I watch, if there's a race on TV any weekend, I won't miss any of them. But stick and ball sports, I'm probably not going to catch the game.
Okay, gotcha.
But will the Celtics beat the, who is it?
The Bucks, Milwaukee
Sure,
Bucks.
Let's go with yes. Okay. I'll give a fan favorite answer there. Yeah, they'll beat them.
I'm sure your fans from home will love that.
Not that I know anything about it.
Well, before we conclude this edition, episode 28 of TPF Live, of course, Nathan, of course, you're getting ready to wrap up your sophomore season, or year rather, at St. Bonaventure. And as far as I'm concerned, I am taking a two-week break before the grad school classes pick up for 14 weeks in a row for my senior year, if there is such a thing for grad school. So I'm pretty sure you are looking forward to not looking at books or whatever you kids do these days, because I do not know what happens for undergrads these days. So pretty sure, what, you have like a few more finals left?
Yeah, I got some finals and some final projects to finish up and just some general work. So it's only going to be a busy week with that and all the Dover stuff and, you know, just all the end of school year stuff you got to be moving out and that whole nine yard. But by the time we record next week, I will be home, which will be nice. Back into a work / TPF schedule, if you will. Obviously doing some my real job in the mornings, and then in the afternoon and at night, so I'll be working on the TPF content. So excited for that. Certainly we'll have more opportunities to get back to the track this summer, which will be fun. Got some more NASCAR races planned, an IMSA race. So it should be a good summer, and excited to push out a lot more content for TPF.
I'm excited too. And also, if I haven't mentioned it before, congrats on the TPF internship. I want to give kudos to the Rook Headhunters for getting you on. Of course, that was you taking the initiative, and I was just saying, sure thing. So excited to have you. And of course, our fellow teammate, Taylor Kitchen, as our other intern. So just want the folks at home to know, if you see some quality content and TPF going in a new direction with a few aspects for the website in our outlet, well, you can thank Nathan and Taylor for getting us to that next direction. So I'm really excited about that for TPF as we're kicking off our 14th year of operations, which is crazy. And overall, just looking forward to getting to the summer show side of things. So for the radio show side, I do want to thank everyone at WSBU, The Buzz, 88.3 FM, for having our show air for basically, you know, most of my first year as a grad student and most of your sophomore year. And we'll be back, of course, once we're all back on campus, or most of us, and at least on the podcast show side of things, folks, don't worry. We're going to have episodes rolling out every week, so should be fun. And if you want some musical choices, we can just tweet them to you, and you can check out our Twitter. And we actually don't have to censor them because, we've been purposely avoiding those dirty songs or songs to curse words because we have to be pretty good about FCC rules. So, yeah. Kind of crazy to realize that the radio show side of things has wrapped up, but the podcast show side of things, we've got a lot to get to. And as James Rolfe and Mike Pate used to say for their show, James and Mike Mondays, many more Wednesdays, many more podcasts. That's what I'll say for TPF Live. So Nathan, you should enjoy, life after sophomore year wraps up. And as for me, I'm going to try to enjoy these 2 weeks that I'm off from school before the books and online learning resumes. but we'll always have great content on TPF. So thank you, my man, for joining us as always here on TPF Live as our trusty co-host and our great co-driver. And as for everyone else who's listening in, stay tuned. TPF Live is going to be really bumping and happening in the summertime. So we're going to wrap up this puppy right now because we're out of time. But I wanted to thank you all so very much for joining us for another edition of TPF Live, the fastest car racing talk. So for Nathan Solomon and Kaz Prella, I'm your host Rob T. Janssen, signing out and saying thank you very much for tuning in to our podcast on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And until next time, folks, let's go get that checkered flag, and I'll see you all next time. So long, everyone.